Welcome to the Vintage Podcast, brought to you from the Go Digital event in 2011. If you missed this Vintage London Hub event, here is an opportunity to catch up. Dr. Shaylee Minocca from the Open University shares her findings on ways digital technologies are currently used in researcher training and development.
Our next speaker is Dr. Shaylee Minocca from the Open University, and she's a reader in computing in the Department of Computing. And you are currently involved in a Vitae-funded project, so that's a big interest for us, related to the use of digital technology in researcher careers training and development, and particularly for research dialogues at a distance.
I'll be presenting a summary of our findings from the Vitae-funded project on digital technologies for research dialogues. So first, I'd like to thank my colleagues who have helped me on this project in one way or the another, which is Christopher Hardy, Marion Petrie, and Bridget Haywood, all based at the Open University, and I am based in the Center for Research in Computing at the Open University. I would also like to acknowledge the support of Vitae for this research and my head of the department, Hugh Robinson, at the Open University. So what we did as a part of this project was to send out a question over email on several discussion forums and mailing lists, asking researchers which technologies they are using and for which purposes and to support which kinds of research activities. And what we found as a result of this data analysis were that there were six key activities that the researchers were using these technologies, particularly focused on communication and collaboration. And these six activities are formal dialogue with supervisors, informal interactions with peers and supervisors, for sharing of documents and for storage of documents, using technologies as a space for reflection, working with ideas and the research process, engaging with the community through these technologies, and finally for keeping themselves informed. And another thing that we noticed was that the researchers were using the technologies which were available in the public domain, the social software. So even if the institution provided these technologies, for example, the wikis or the blogs, as a part of their virtual learning environment, they would use MoinMoin to set up a wiki, or MediaWiki to set up a wiki, or use the WordPress to set up a blog, rather than using their institution-based VLE or institution-based tools. And we also found that these tools were supporting communication, collaboration, and community building. And that was the main focus that the researchers were using the technologies for. So this is a typical project team meeting where you're seated across a table, you've got a whiteboard to assist you in your discussions, and you might even have a flip chart to brainstorm and discuss your ideas. But what is happening in these formal dialogue with using technologies is, what we found was that email still remains the primary mode of communication amongst these researchers, especially if they are based at a distance. They are also using Skype a lot these days, especially, again, if the project team members, one or more, are not co-located, they are geographically distributed, then they have these monthly research meetings in Skype. They also use Google Chat, which is one of the audio or the video conferencing tools. Illuminate is also being used. It is a licensed software, but if you are just three users, you can use the free Illuminate version as well. And we found in our data that one of the research teams who had four or five students working on a particular research area, they would meet monthly in Illuminate, where each of the students would discuss the progress they have made over the month, the obstacles that they are facing, and then there would be a collective discussion on what is happening. And sometimes they even record these Illuminate sessions. So if a particular team member is missing, they can listen to these recorded lectures and get a feel of having been at the meeting. Researchers are also using SMS messages, and we asked them what they were using for, and they said sometimes we have a quick query, or if we want to give this good news about a paper acceptance, we quickly send an SMS message, or if we've sent a paper for review to the supervisor, we send them an SMS message just to alert them that I've already sent you the paper by email, or I have posted it onto the wiki, and so on. They're also using Wiki a lot for formal dialogue. So they are using it for recording meeting notes, for having the agenda of the meeting on the Wiki, or even for sharing interim drafts of the paper on the Wiki so that the supervisors can comment on this Wiki, they can get the feedback, and it's also a collaborative authoring tool. So the supervisors can also comment and write in this Wiki before they have the paper formatted for publication. Flash Meeting is an Open University developed video conferencing tool, but it's in the public domain. It's being used by international colleagues. In fact, many of the European Union projects, the EU funded projects, use this Flash Meeting. And again, you can record your Flash Meetings which are happening in this, so that again, if somebody is missing in the meeting, they can listen to these recordings. And we are increasingly using Second Life, which is a 3D based virtual world, and it's an avatar based virtual world. So you would be meeting with a student just as in a room like this, or you could meet him in the library. So the environment is set up exactly as you have it in the real life, but you meet as avatars. And we find it extremely effective for supporting our part-time distance education students and students whom we only meet once in a year. But students get that sense of presence, a sense of place. And sometimes they report back to us saying, it's as if I've met you today, being in this kind of a 3D virtual world. So we do have formal meetings in Second Life. Now coming to informal interactions. This is the kind of a scene that you have if you have a number of researchers standing across and having a discussion of their research ideas or discussing about what they have been thinking about. But what is happening in the technological domain is that people are using Twitter to share these quick updates, as Sarah mentioned, or discussing about the conference they have been to, or discussing about a blog post that they have just posted onto the web and giving an intimation of that blog post, or sometimes giving regular updates from a conference they are attending. So Twitter is increasingly being used for these informal interactions. Many research teams have also set up presence in Ning, which is a social networking platform, and special interest groups have been set up in Ning. And Facebook and its groups are also being used for these informal interactions. And in fact, in one of our data set, we found that there is a research team who have a student based in Malta who they don't meet regularly. So they have set up this Facebook group for informal interactions and where they talk regularly about the research. Also, Wiki is being used for informal interactions. And in fact, I wanted to give you an example of the Wiki that we've set up in our center, where students share links that they have come across. So if they've come across an interesting link on academic writing, they put it up on the Wiki. If they have been to a conference, they post their trip reports onto this Wiki. Or somebody's just completed their probation viva, or they have published a paper, they write about their experiences of writing for a conference onto this Wiki. And over the years, we've seen it's become such a useful repository for students, because students who even left our university, their experience stories are still there on this Wiki. And we ourselves as academics and researchers have our own Wiki. So let's say if I've got a successful funding from JISC, I discuss about my experiences on the Wiki and my colleagues can comment on it. Or if I attend a training session at the university, which my colleagues haven't attended, I put it up again on the Wiki. And over the years, again, it's become a very useful repository of experiences, of bookmarks, and so on. And we also share our good news on this Wiki. Instead of sending regular emails of our publication results, all this information goes on to the Wiki. And we have somebody who looks at the Wiki and sees that we are regularly updating the Wiki as the time passes. People are also using blogs, and this is something that Sarah mentioned about how they are using blogs for informal interactions. Many student researchers use it for sharing informal literature reviews, some early analysis. We've also seen researchers recruiting their participants through blogs and sharing of early drafts of the paper as well on the blog to be able to get this early feedback. Eliminate, we have seen again student researchers forming their self-help study groups on this Eliminate and meeting informally for informal interactions. Now, CloudWorks is again an open university tool which is in the public domain. It's been there for 3 years. It is extremely popular among researchers who are doing research in e-learning, in education, or technology-enabled learning. And it's got a very wide user base and a community. So if you're doing research in these areas, it's a very effective environment for getting feedback, for getting links and resources, and even some of the conferences, they maintain their spaces in CloudWorks. So you can even go and look up at the various resources that a conference has put up as well. So CloudWorks is an extremely useful resource for educational researchers. Social Learn is another open university tool. It's still under development and is being evaluated. It's somewhat, I would say, a mix of LinkedIn, which is a professional networking tool, and Facebook, which is a social networking tool. So it's something in between. So it has the interface of Facebook, but it has the a kind of ethos of LinkedIn. But what distinguishing feature of social learn is that it provides you pathways for research careers development. It provides you pathways for research skills development. And I think within about the next 6 months, by the end of this year, it should be available in the public domain for researchers to utilize and use it. We also use Second Life again for informal interactions, and this came up in our data as well, that not only Open University but many other teams outside are using it for informal interactions, especially if you have research teams who are geographically distributed. So you might have formal face-to-face meetings once in 3 months. You might have Skype conversations once in a month. But for informal updates, weekly updates, people meet in Second Life with the researcher, maybe the principal investigator meeting with the researcher and getting these updates. This is how we traditionally used to share documents, by cataloging them and storing them this way. But now what is happening is that people are using wikis. In fact, in our data set, there was one research student who has placed all her materials on one wiki, which she has opened access only to her supervisors. So all her meeting notes, her literature review, her papers, her early drafts of the dissertation, they are all on this wiki. People are using blogs, as we've discussed with Sarah's experience, and again, they are using it not only for informal interactions, but also for sharing documents. And some of them have not made them public as well. They have made them only accessible to their immediate research colleagues or to their third-party monitor or to their supervisors. For academic reference management systems, people are using different kinds of tools these days. EndNote is a kind of a licensed software that most institutions have. But researchers, we found, are moving on to Mendeley and Zotero. And why they're doing that is because if I have an account on Mendeley and if I start storing my papers there, I also get to know about other colleagues who have similar research interests. So if I have papers on social software, I can find out who other researchers are there who have interest in social software, which papers have they come across and stored. And therefore, through this community, I learn about more about my research area and about the researchers who are working in this research area. Delicious is another tool, which is a social bookmarking tool. And in our data, we found several teams having this project spaces set up in Delicious, where the entire team shares the bookmarks in this project space in Delicious. And again, Delicious is very similar to the concept of Mendeley, where you can come across people who have similar research interests. You come across their bookmarks, and that is how you get to know more about the things in your research area through the interactions through these tools. SlideShare, people share their presentations, documents, even video presentations now through SlideShare. And what in our research we found was that our researchers were saying they are not only getting visibility to sharing these documents on SlideShare, but they are also getting invitations for presentations. They are getting invitations for collaborative bidding. Sometimes they are receiving invitations for collaboration. So all this is happening by putting up your stuff out there in the SlideShare. But for ethical reasons or otherwise, for data protection issues, the research data is still being stored on shared server spaces in the institution. And for large files, people nowadays don't send large files by email. They are using Dropbox, something that Sarah again mentioned as a part of her research, and Box.net as well. So for example, I have subscribed on Box.net, and for various research projects, I have put up folders on Box.net. And you have more flexibility than the 20 or 25 giga capacity that you have with a free account. With a subscription, you have more space to share. And you can bring in collaborators, and you can keep sharing your documents in these shared spaces. And it's particularly useful if you have collaborators working across different places or different institutions. Normally for reflection and working with ideas, we sit around and discuss our ideas or somebody shows us how to do things. But what is happening now is with the use of technology, people are using blogs as spaces for reflection, putting up their ideas and getting feedback on their early ideas. They are using Twitter, as I said earlier, for sharing their reflective ideas. And for representations, they are also using mind mapping software like FreeMind. We also found the use of OmniGraffle in our data, which is a Mac-based software. You've got to have a license for it, but then you can draw flowcharts, you can draw schematic diagrams, you can draw processes, activities, and so on. And many researchers are now using this. We also found the use of a Flash Vlog, which is actually an Open University tool, but it's been in the public domain for a long time. And what people do is to build these online video diaries. So researchers going to a conference, for example, early career researchers or doctoral students going to a doctoral consortium, they put up a video on this website. And that is a kind of an early introduction before you go to a conference. Or after they have attended a conference, they put up, they record this video in, using Flash Vlog. Wordle is again a tool in the public domain, which is extremely effective if you're doing early analysis of your data, which has lost a lot of textual information. You might use it at, in a workshop to capture the user perceptions before a workshop and to capture the user perceptions at the end of the workshop and then compare the two Wordles. So it's a useful diagrammatic tool and interesting as well, and participants enjoy it, but it's only for very preliminary early data analysis. YouTube is being used for sharing videos, and also Cohere and Compendium, we came across these tools. Again, they are Open University tools, but being used for sense making, for collecting ideas and arguments. So if there's a topic on climate change, and several people over the web are putting up their ideas, supporting or they're against a particular view, you can build up these diagrammatic representations by using these kinds of tools. So these are the kinds of tools that they are using for reflection and for working with ideas and making sense of those ideas. Engaging with the community, it would be a kind of a workshop style like here, or you would go for a conference, or you would go for a meeting and meet people. But using technologies, people are engaging with the community through wikis, through blogs, Delicious, as I mentioned earlier, because you are implicitly or informally contacting colleagues through this Delicious tool, through SlideShare. Scribd is again a tool which is very similar to SlideShare, where you can share documents and presentations. LinkedIn, as we know, it's a professional networking tool, but many of the mailing lists and the forums that we had earlier are slowly moving as groups on LinkedIn, and that's further enhancing the engagement with people in your research area or people with similar research interests. YouTube is again another website to share your videos. What we have found as a result of seeing how people are using these tools is that something that VTI's researcher development framework says in domain D about the development of research skills, like you should be engaging with the community, you should have public engagement skills, you should have collaborative and communication skills, and you should learn to work with others. Actually, by the usage of these tools, researchers are implicitly developing these skills. By learning to share information, by learning to collaborate on these tools, they are implicitly learning those skills which are outlined in VTI's Domain D Researcher Development Framework. Now, keeping informed, which is a sixth research activity which we found in our data. Now, the traditional way, and some of us still do it, is to go on a Friday afternoon and spend some time in the library, or go early morning on a Saturday and spend some time in the library looking through journals, looking through new books, and so on. But now what researchers are really doing is they are keeping themselves informed very sensibly through iTunes U, where you have podcasts, you have podcasts of experts in the area, of people who are doing research in similar research areas. You can view them. Also YouTube, you have some excellent videos of some research videos there. At the Open University, we have a PhD skills website. And what we do is that students are able to do an online skills audit. And depending upon the skills that they feel they need more training for, what we've done is we've got matching training documents along with those skills. And these are multimedia in nature. So what students can do is fill up their skills gap by going through those training documents that we've developed for them. So this is how they keep themselves informed of how they can update their research skills over a period of time. I also mentioned about Eliminate, how you can view recorded lectures. So sometimes we have experts coming to the university, and I've also noticed in other universities, and you will also find on the Eliminate's website, they have these recorded lectures of experts that you can watch and learn more from them. TED Talks featured a lot in our research data. Many researchers go to this TED Talks website and listen to experts in their research area. And they find it very inspiring. They also learn the art of public speaking, that how you can communicate a kind of a technical area in very simple terms. Through the use of, through listening to these TED Talks, the researchers are getting the experience of doing that. And again, the RSS feeds and Google Reader featured a lot in our data. So let's say researchers are frequently visit some websites for getting themselves updated, or they are following a particular blog. So let's say I'm following Sarah's blog on what she's doing in her research. What I can do is set up an RSS feed from Sarah's blog. So whenever there is a new posting by Sarah, I would get an update of that in my Google Reader. And then I don't have to go to Sarah's blog every day, but I get an update from that. And we found that students and other researchers are using this RSS feed and other readers. I mean, Google Reader is just one of them I've mentioned as an example. But there are several readers out there that you can use to keep yourself updated. So you don't have to go to these websites again and again. The data gets pushed on to you. Similarly, if you are listening to podcasts by a particular expert in the area, it again can be fed to you. So this is how people are keeping them informed. But what we have found as a result of this is that researchers using these social software tools are bringing up challenges for supervisors or staff who look after these researchers, and also for institutions. And therefore, the researchers who are publishing in this public domain, they need to be aware of the professional issues of publishing on the web, like the intellectual property rights, the ethical issues with respect to the research data, how much should they be putting onto the web, and the duty of care not only towards the research community, but first and foremost towards the research participants. And they also need to maintain professionalism while using social networking sites. So for example, a student having not a very happy meeting with the supervisor and they going on to blogging, it might adversely affect their relationship with the supervisor. It might adversely affect the relationship of the institution with the supervisor and institution with the student. And therefore, researchers have to be cautious of all these efforts. Also, I feel that there are some digital literacy skills that our researchers need. And supervisors, what we found was that there is little or no guidance which is available for these supervisors to be able to train this. So I think there is a need for developing more training documents for supervisors so that they can impart the digital literacy skills to their researchers or to their student researchers. Because if, let's say, you're working in a project which has several research colleagues working on a research program, you wouldn't like your student to be blogging on those early research ideas because it might affect the whole research program. Or if you're working with an industrial collaborator, you might have restrictions on the copyrights, you might have restrictions on the intellectual property, and you might have restrictions on the ethical issues as well. And therefore, it is very important to impart these digital literacy skills to researchers. But a small subset of our data, in which researchers also said that they had concern about putting their data or their ideas into the public domain. They were concerned about the permanence of the tools. So let's say if Delicious vanishes one day, and there was quite a fear about a couple of months ago, then what happens to all the data that I've been putting up in Delicious? Or if, let's say, one of the other social networking sites doesn't work. So there is a concern for that, and those subset of researchers are still using the institution-based tools, like EndNote, or they are using the servers for sharing the documents. They might use Facebook for informal interactions, but they are not using it as a repository for their document storage and for sharing of their documents. They're also concerned about the data security and the data privacy, where the data is lying on external servers outside the institution. So I think these are the kinds of issues that have come up. In your pack, what I've done is, in the pack you will find a handout. And what I've done is I have included two more slides, which are these ones, which I have given you profiles of technology used by researchers. So how are researchers mixing and matching these technologies for the different research activities? And all these are authentic profiles, but I have anonymized them. And I have also got the other viewpoint, which is how supervisors are using these technologies. And something that came from our data, and Sarah also touched upon it, is that sometimes supervisors are obstructing the use of technologies by the researchers, because either they don't know how these technologies are used, or sometimes they don't feel that it would be advantageous to use these social software technologies. So I think that also comes through. But then there are other supervisors who are mixing and matching and very nicely using these technologies. So I hope that this is a good resource for you. What we've also done is, as a part of our VTI project, we've tried to match each of the skills outlined in the researcher development framework of VTI to the tools that could support the development of the skills. And our report is going to go live next month, so I hope that report would be useful for you, where you can see a direct matching of the research skills development with the tools in the social software domain. Many thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to this VTI Go Digital event podcast.